Last weekend, the third annual Walk for the Park took place, which was hosted by Mohawk Village Memorial Park, a park that is a tribute and memorial to all those who attended residential schools. And this year's event was held in honor of the late John Elliott, a Mohawk Institute residential school survivor who passed away earlier this year. And here to talk to me about the event is Dawn Hill, a residential school survivor herself, and also a member of the board of directors for Mohawk Village Memorial Park. So thank you very much for doing this today, Dawn.
You're welcome. I think the important thing is that John was a runaway, and so we decided that we should do something in that memory, because he did that. He ran all the way from the Mushel, 17 kilometers all the way home to, you know, fifth line there. So the first year we had it at the Mushel there, at the residential school. But the second year we decided we'd put it down at the Blue Track in Ashwegan here, because there was already a walk coming from the Civic Center to the Mushel in the summer. So then we thought, okay, well, that's kind of, it's interfering with what we're doing. And that's not a bad thing. So we moved it down here, and we had a lot of support, and John was, you know, the main attraction of this event. Because I can't believe how many people he's related to in on the reserve here. So had a lot of support, and he went with us to, say, Niagara College and talked about that and really hyped it up for us so that we'd get more donations. The same with the Hamilton Wentworth. They also contributed to, like, donations to our park. And so it was getting the word out there, and we had already started planning this year's before John passed away, because we always thought we should start early. And then we thought, there's no point in not having it, because it is about John and running away. And so we dedicated this walk again to John Elliott, because of all the support he had for Mohawk Village Memorial Park. Did a lot of talking for us and encouraging, you know, people to get involved with the Memorial Park. And I think that's where some of our best memories are of John, because he really did get involved, and he was very active, going places with us and getting the word out there. We really appreciated him. He was a really good friend.
And so for those who may not be familiar, can you tell us about the Memorial Park itself and why it was created and the significance behind it?
Okay. Yeah. Back, we started as a committee, I think we actually got status in 2009, somewhere around there. But we started as a committee, and then we thought that wasn't enough. We don't need just a little garden. It'll be, you know, pushed aside and everything. And my sister, Roberta, was more than one to say, we need something bigger. So we ended up approaching band council at the time. Ava Hill was the chief. And they voted to give us 5 acres on the girls' side of the Mushel to develop as a memorial park. So it took us a little while to get our not-for-profit charity organization status, but we got it. And so then we started raising funds. We got a lot of support from the community, like economic development, band council, but also from Ontario Trillium Foundation, Canada Heritage, wherever we could to get things started and get things moving in the park. And the park is all about being a memorial to all of the children who went or were placed in the Mushel. But we're going to put up a great big 30-foot, 6-foot-high wall, black granite, as soon as we get all the money to do it, that names all of these over 60 First Nations communities and two territories that had children placed in the Mushel, in the residential school. And as far away as B.C., Alberta, Manitoba, mostly Ontario, some from Quebec. And we did have Inuit children that came to the Mushel, although we called them Eskimos at the time. We didn't know any better. And put those names on that wall so everybody knows how far-reaching residential school stretched across Canada, you know, and for what reason. But it was in the Indian Act. They're going to take the children and try to do away with the languages, do away with the culture. But I think somehow that now has failed, because we're getting all of those things back. We've got language in our schools now. Everybody's now getting back to their basic understanding of our culture. And we have lots of interest in outside communities who really want to know. They want to know why they didn't know. But I guess it was a closed system. Who's going to tell on themselves? And the government certainly isn't. But the church also had a big hand in it across Canada. You know, they're the ones who hired these people that ran these schools. And it wasn't for the betterment of children. There was no regard for children. And I think that's the big tragedy in all of this, in this American, I mean, Canadian history. But it's getting out there. And I think that's what people generally are trying to wrap their heads around. Why did it happen? How did it happen? And I think it needs to be more put in our history books, those genuine stories. People who actually experienced, you know, the situation in any residential school across Canada.
And talking about the park and being able to share fond memories with John and just the meaning behind the park itself, what has that meant to the community and to residential school survivors and their families about having this place to come and be able to honor all those who were involved in the residential school system?
Well, you know, we haven't really had a whole lot of response from our own community. A bit, but it seems to be out somewhere else, almost. You know, we do some talking here at on the reserve, different events and stuff, but the majority of our time were spent in other communities. But it's kind of like, we even have one here in our own territory who said it didn't happen that way, that we all placed our children there. And, or, you know, our parents placed us there. And some of that did happen, but when you look up the reasons why, those people who placed their kids there were, if you didn't, you could be fined, you could be jailed, you know, withdrawn support. And I don't know, a lot of people don't really want to talk about it, so maybe that's why they don't go up there. But the park is open to anybody who wants that, who has that same like mind that we have. We want a peaceful place, a place where we can talk to each other, different communities, even within our own community. We'd gladly have people come up and talk. And I know that there's been language development taking place this past summer through Wetland Cultural Center. They've, you know, rented the park. We've had paddlers on the Grand, and they're all interested in what has gone on there and bringing that around to not only our own people, but people in other communities. So everybody understands.
And speaking on the event this past weekend, what exactly was the Walk for the Park and what's it all about and what does it do to support the park and its initiative?
Well, it is all about doing some physical activity, but it was more like what John said, we should be walking and whatever. And yeah, a lot of our members do agree we need to be walking more. We need to be more physical. And all of those people who came to the park, it was all about the walking. And because they're trying to support us, I know we raised over $10,000 this year on the walk, and about that same amount the past year when John was still there. But it does help us keeps us going as a viable organization, a charity. Because if you fall below a certain level, they take away your charity status. So we don't want that to happen. The hard part is actually getting funding where we can actually do more in the park, get more done in the park. So it's just a fundraiser because we have different things that we do throughout the year. But when people hear the stories, they're more than willing to donate to our park. Right now, we also have the documentary, The Nature of Healing, that people can rent from us. Like, we charge about $500 for every time they want to show it in their community or their organization. And most of them seem to be very glad to pay that, but it helps us. But we need bigger funding, you know, to get this wall done. So, you know, we still put in our applications where we can. We recently got turned down from OTF. They just said they had too many applications and couldn't help us with that big granite wall this year. But they said, try again next year. But we, like John always said, I would like to see this done before I croak. And unfortunately, he did pass before he saw it finished. And I think the rest of us feel that same way. And in honor of John's memory, we want to see it done as well. Because it'll be something really for the, you know, the next seven generations to come, that history will be there, that history will be told.
And is there a goal number that you guys are looking for to maybe talk about additions or upgrades that you have for the park itself and enhancing the space for visitors?
Right now, well, that we had partial funding for the base of that big monument that we're going to put in, that 30-foot monument. But we still need $150,000 for that, if anybody out there is listening. But to actually finish the whole park, we still need over $2 million to get all the features in it, to get all the pathways done and connected, all the plants in, the small memorial garden that'll come right by the mush hole there, and the big theater that's going to be further up in the park. It'll have tiered seating and, you know, it's like a big theater where you can have language, you can have ceremonies and all of that. But again, until we get that major funding, it's going to take a long time.
And just touching back on John, I he was the main attraction, as you said, for this event. And I know over the past few years, you've been able to work with him very closely, with the two of you sitting on the board of directors for Survivor Secretariat as well.
Right. Yes.
For those who may not know who John was, could you share about him and his story and why it was so important to have him and his name be a part of this event this year?
Well, I didn't know John from the Mush Hole. He was there before my time. But listening to his stories about, he always wanted to be home for Christmas. So he always ran away on Christmas Eve, you know, that 17 down the railroad tracks from Canesville back down to like Chiefswood down there. So I think those are the more important things that, like, he shared many stories with us. Some of them are pretty funny. And I know that they've recorded some of his stories at Woodlands, and we've recorded him on The Nature of Healing with some of his perceptions of his life here. He did go on after he left the Mush Hole, and he went on to be a master painter. He spent most of his time in the U.S., by the sounds of it, and eventually came home. I can't even remember how long ago he told me he came home. But he lived on Fifth Line there, and we'd go pick him up, and he had never, ever said, no, I'm not going with you girls, or because mostly it was girls, but we were old ladies. And he would go anywhere with us. He went to Iqaluit, Nunavut. He went out to Vancouver. He went out to Los Angeles, Arizona, all through Manitoulin, Barrie, Toronto, everywhere we went. He was more than willing to, you know, speak on our behalf. If, you know, when he was asked, he didn't volunteer to do that, but sometimes we just had to ask him to share things. And he was such a commanding presence wherever we went. People really wanted to talk to him, really wanted to hear some of what he had to say about his life there. So it was very encouraging that he was willing to help us with the memorial walk, you know.
And next Tuesday, September 30th, it's a very important day for the history of Indian residential school system and the impacts it's had. I was just wondering if you had a message that you would like to leave with listeners about the importance of remembering residential school survivors and especially the connection to them through this park.
Well, I know that Woodlands has rented that our park for that day. And a lot of the survivors will be stationed there. And I think the main thing is that whoever those visitors are, when you go and listen to their documentaries, their videos and stuff like that, that you are hearing true history. Once we're gone, it's gone, unless it's recorded. And thank goodness people have recorded that. You know, like Woodlands have several films about stories from residential school survivors. And those are the important things that we need to keep. We need to have those shown to various people, like not just our community, although I really like that idea that so many more people would come up and look at those stories, but also outside communities. There's a whole interest across Canada of what really happened, what really transpired in residential schools. And those true stories are there. And I say true stories. A story sounds like it's made up, but it isn't. This is a true story. Accounting of what happened to residential school kids as kids. You know, they're coming back to those memories as older people now. What really transpired, what really influenced them, what they felt being in that place back in the 40s, the 50s, or the 60s.
And just lastly, how can community members learn more about the park and continue to show support beyond the annual walk?
Well, we do have a website, mohawkvillagepark.com. You can go on our site. It tells you different things about who we are, where donations are from, what we've done with the park. I know there was some issue with the apple trees being removed that we said were dead and diseased, but we took pictures of all of those. Those are on our site when we had them taken down. And there was no bodies found under them, as also the rumor said. But this year, for the first time, Dionysay put in apple trees in our park, free of charge. And this year is the first year that those apple trees are bearing fruit, which is, to me, is just amazing. I just love that idea. And they put in other different non-invasive plants and stuff like that. And we plan on working with them very closely. So. As we get more developed. So whatever we put in there for plants, Dionysay will be helping us with that, or we'll be paying them to do that.
All right, Don, thank you very much for doing this today and talking about the event and everything that's happening with Mohawk Village Memorial Park.
Okay, thank you.
I'm Andrew Dow, and this news story is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, which supports the creation of original civic news.